So the more you bark commands, the more you give compliance statements, the more you basically try to like puppeteer them, they just, their little souls can't settle when they're constantly having external control. So once you start to like learn how to share the power and help empower them and make them feel like they have a voice and that their voice matters, they just start to thrive in life. And so these kids literally are such a blessing. It's not like a fault the way they're designed. But holy smokes, it just takes a lot.
I'm so honored to present to you today, Wendy Snyder. We're going to talk about cactuses and how sometimes raising kids with certain strong-willed personalities feels a little like raising a cactus and how we can do that gently so that everything works out the best for the kids and the parents. Thank you so much for being here, Wendy.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Katie. I just adore you, and I'm excited to have this conversation. It's my favorite thing to speak about, so happy to be here.
And definitely, immediately right now while you're listening, go follow Wendy on Instagram at, is it just Fresh? Yeah, Fresh Start Wendy. Fresh Start Wendy. Yeah. She has such good content, and it's like bite-sized and just so encouraging in, you know, in the parenting space of little reminders, right? Like, because sometimes we know what to do up here in our head. But in the day-to-day, you know, whirlwind of living, don't always remember. So it's good when you're in like the scrolling mood and probably doing nothing helpful for yourself that Wendy, a Fresh Start Family, can interrupt that and remind you how to be a good mom or a good dad that day. So that's good stuff.
Well, thanks, girl. I put a lot of effort into that stuff. So thank you so much. It's amazing how tough it is to create this type of curriculum and education into like a 20-second quick tidbit.
You do amazing, and you can tell. I can feel the work you put in because I do not put in that work on Instagram. It's always nice to see others do it well. All right, let's do the official introduction so people know who I'm talking to. Wendy Snyder is a positive parenting educator, family life coach, and advocate. She's certified in redirecting children's behavior and the Joy of Parenting program. If you feel like your joy is sucked out of your parenting, that is why you're here today, friends. Wendy founded her online business, Fresh Start Family, so that she could spread the message of positive parenting across the world. And as I said, she's so good at it. She's developed a variety of online positive parenting courses and has a monthly membership program to further support families because she knows we forget what we're supposed to do sometimes. And she helps families parent from a place of purpose, of intention, by creating healthy, respectful, and cooperative relationships. And that all sounds so good, but I have a feeling that there's probably a story that might not be so pretty. It might be a little rough around the edges, maybe, on how you got into this. How'd you get started as a parenting educator, Wendy? And then how many kids do you have and what ages are they, of course?
Yes. So I've got two kiddos. We realize that we have two similar ages. I've got a sixth grader who's almost 12 and a ninth grader who's almost 15. And I found this work about a decade ago, a little over a decade ago, which, you were right, Katie. I was so stressed out. So many of us who end up in this field, right? We have these beautiful personal stories where I really believe that God just uses them in this amazing way to help others. So I was really stressed out. I had left my career in the corporate world. I was an event planner and decided to stay home with my babies, let go of my most amazing nanny on the planet. And I just was thinking, like, this is going to be beautiful. And the kids are going to nap every day. The house will be clean. We'll go to the beach and I'll exercise. And before long, it was just a total, you know, poop show. And Stella, my oldest, so I just had my second. He had colic just like my first. I got two colicky babies. So the first 3 months was just miserable as a mom, just thinking like, what is wrong with me? I can't make this baby stop crying. And then the toddler at the time was just embarking on the many challenges of toddlerhood, especially as a strong-willed kid. So her and I just would just have a lot of disagreements. It felt like she was in timeouts 50 times a day. And we would just butt heads a lot because I always joke when I teach that the apple doesn't fall far usually with strong-willed kids. So I'm a super strong-willed person. It's helped me build this business and lead in the capacity that I do. And she's this beautiful, super strong-willed little girl. So we were really in a pickle. And I was just miserable. And thank God I stumbled upon a positive parenting course at her preschool, at the same preschool she was. I was getting phone calls at noon every day when she was supposed to stay till 2, saying, you know, I think it's probably just better if you pick Stella up after lunch. That same preschool, yeah, has had been teaching or had been offering these classes to parents for, I think now they're at 30 years or something of offering this curriculum. And so that's how I got introduced to the work. And I stepped in and just realized that I had before that this viewpoint that something was wrong with Stella. Like she was, I knew that she was so strong-willed. You could feel her strong will since birth. She was the type of baby who would just hold herself, like her head was held high from a very young age as a baby. She was just like Jack, like she was strong. She would like, we would hold our friends' babies and they would just kind of be like buttery little, you know, just snuggly, buttery. And Stella was just like always strong and alert. And like, she'd give like the stink eye to people really early at parties if they tried to like, you know, snuggle her, hold her. You could just feel this little girl's strong personality from an early age. So I just kept thinking during that season that was really tough, like something's wrong with her. She's super defiant. She's out of control. Maybe there's something wrong with her. We had her at a bunch of doctors thinking like, you know, ADD, ADHD, ODD. Like I even Googled like exorcism at one point. I'm like, what if she's possessed? Oh my gosh.
Oh, Wendy. And, oh, honey.
I know. It was bad. It was bad. And it's funny now, right? But like, honestly, I bet some listeners can relate. Like it was just a dark period where I was like, how in the world did I get here? Like I am a smart person. Like I would think to myself, like, I did well in college. I fell in love early. I've created my own business. I was a coach with kids for years. I was a springboard diving coach. Like, how is this possible that this little three-year-old just won't sit still at the dinner table, won't keep her hands to herself, like, can't pet the dog gently? Like, if I say left, she goes right. Like, what is wrong, right? And so what these classes helped me realize that there was nothing wrong with her. I just had to learn how to communicate with her differently, how to discipline her differently, because holy smokes, she was strong-willed kids. They do not respond well to the hand-me-down tactics of fear and force and intimidation and external control. So I just naturally, as I learned, I started to see her different. I started to talk to her different. I started to discipline her different. And she just started to thrive. And so it was after that I was like, I need to teach this stuff. So I got certified in a few different programs and then went on to get my life coaching certification. And now I created this online learning platform where we get to help people, families all over the world. And that's what's so cool about this online stuff, right? Is we have members in over 15 countries now, and it's universal. The challenges of the parenthood are universal. It's not just an American thing. So it doesn't matter if I'm working with someone or my team is working with someone in Ireland or a small town in Ohio. It's all the same, right? Especially when it comes to these beautiful, strong-willed kids. And I can tell you a little bit more in a bit about why I like to call them cactus kids.
Yeah, well, I'm big on definitions. And I feel like many, many parents say, oh, my kid has a strong personality or they're strong-willed. And I wonder if they're, you know, I kind of wonder if we're all using the same vocabulary. So let's start with a definition. How do you describe a strong-willed personality? You mentioned you are one. So I want you to describe a child and an adult if they're different. And then advantages and disadvantages, because as you said, you thought something was wrong. And I do think many, many parents or even just non-parents think that the strong will is a disadvantage. But I know that you see advantages as well. So that was kind of a big question.
No, it's great. I know. I like to start with definitions too. And the way I like to see kids that are strong-willed is, I mean, you can really, really feel it, right? So, you know, oftentimes they're described as button pushers or the kind of kid that's maybe constantly getting in trouble compared to your other kids. He's the one or she's the one that's like jumping on the couch when you're like, everyone else actually like listened, right? Like use some of the traditional, what I call hand-me-down parenting tactics, and it like works with your other kids. You might threaten them. Like, you're going to get your iPad taken away. And the other ones are like, oh, and the strong-willed one is like, meh, and they keep jumping, right? Or they just have like they kind of act like they might know everything, right? Or they're just maybe the one that's a little bit more difficult to get along with, right? And so when they're young, a lot of these kids will use words to describe them, like they're demanding and they're insisting, or maybe they're stubborn or bossy. Like my little girl was definitely called bossy when she was in kindergarten, which, by the way, I love Sheryl Sandberg's book called Lean In. She was the president of or CEO of Facebook for a long time. She said, you know, if every little girl that was ever told she was bossy was instead like taught how to lead, the world would be a different place. But that was Stella. She was called bossy. Cocky, right? Like difficult, challenging, fixated. They definitely sometimes get really fixated. They might be described as rebellious or defiant. Mm-hmm. So those are the type of things where if that resonates with you, then yeah, you have a beautiful, strong-willed kid. And, you know, I think as when they're kids, it's so tough because the world kind of sends this message that the goal is to have this obedient or this kid that listens well and cooperates, which I get it. That does make life a lot easier as a parent if your kid just gets in the car when you ask them, right? But the goal with these kids, they really are our next generation of leaders. These are the type of personalities that have the courage to be outside of the box. They have the courage to think differently. They have huge justice buttons. So they care about equality. If they see that there is something not right in the world, whether it's with their brothers and sisters or once they're older and it's like on a world stage, they will be the ones who will show up and do the work to make sure that that like justice is had, right? So as these kids grow up, they often do step into leadership roles. And so the thing that we have to remember about leaders is when they're adults, especially good leaders, right? Like leaders that you want to work for. If you think back to maybe your favorite pastor or priest or leader of your company that you worked at or school board, right? Like you think of your not so favorite leaders and then your favorite leaders. But we use words to describe the really great ones as like they were decisive, they were determined, they were persistent. They were, you know, they had definitely an authoritative stance where they were able to remain confident and teach and get people on board. They were influential. They were confident, gutsy, committed, resourceful, non-conforming, bold, right? Like these are where you're like, wow, that is, it's like so amazing. Like I look at my heroes, like Martin Luther King Jr., heck yes, right? Like he was all those things. So it's like to have those kids grow up to be that, we have to learn how to, you know, coach and mentor them, so to speak, when they're young, to step in to those leadership roles and to be that kind of leader. So there's a lot more to describe them. They're often like super highly creative and intelligent. They're often, like I said, really passionate. They often learn by doing. So these are the type of kids that like, it's so important to develop this ability to compassionately discipline them because they just make a lot of mistakes. They have to be the ones to learn from life. And then when you mentor them in a respectful, dignified way, they get it fast. They're like, oh, I stubbed my toe. Like I'm the one who's going to decide to put on the shoes. But if you're like, hey, you're going to stub your toe, they have a tendency to be like, yeah, whatever. So they learn by doing, which makes it even more intense to raise. And then they often have this like intense desire to like kind of test the status quo. And we could go on and on, but they often have like an intense need to feel heard, right? They often have like a significance aspect to them. They often, here's the thing that I bet you will resonate a lot with your picky eaters, is they're often highly sensitive. And this was so true with my daughter. Highly sensitive. So they feel things really, really deeply. So if there's anger or hurt or even a cut, they will feel really, really deeply. And then lastly, that thing I'll say, I mean, there's a lot more I could use to describe them is they're often like very, very highly conscientious and independent, of course, and then just highly committed. So these kids literally are such a blessing. It's not like a fault the way they're designed. but holy smokes, it just takes a lot, right? Which,
yep.
Same with raising cactus. I mean, here in Southern California, it's a whole thing. If you're gonna decide to have cacti in your garden, it's a whole thing. You better learn how to do it.
Oh man, well, not me. We were just talking before we hit record about all the plants I've killed in the last 2 weeks. So luckily, I'm a little better at parenting than gardening. What I love about that is that, especially at first, all of the words you use to describe the strong-willed child, definitely negative connotations. All the words you use to describe what they grow into when well cared for, right? When well raised, yeah. Is that leader, all definitely positive connotations. And so, you know, part of this is we see children differently than adults, and we don't see that potential, right? How this child is like, you know, the strong will is that seed of decisiveness. And so interesting. I think my daughter, who's the same age as your Stella, a freshman as well, she is strong-willed, but she doesn't fit the mold. Yeah. She only has half of what you said, because she's very much a rule follower and would be the first to sit down if you told her stop jumping on the couch. She also has to learn for herself and is very stubborn and very committed. That whole sense of justice, like she has a lot of those things. I always tell her, man, I hope that you say no to peer pressure in high school as vehemently as you say no to me. Like, just keep that stubbornness and use it for good, honey, you know?
So, it's so true, Katie.
And you've said that the traditional parenting methods, I like that phrase, hand-me-down parenting methods. In other words, the way we were parented before most people were reading parenting books and being intentional, you know, we would bribe, we would threaten, we would use rewards, we would nag and say again and again. These aren't great for any child, correct? But particularly ill-fitted for the strong-willed child. What kind of steps can parents take to break the mold of the hand-me-down parenting strategies and create new and better ones?
Yeah. And what I always like to say about this kind of stuff is I really believe there's no right or wrong, right? Like, so as we look at raising the strong-willed child or the cactus kid, what's tricky is that, like, we get to do whatever we want, right? We get to make our own decisions, especially those of us who are strong-willed kids. Strong-willed ourselves, like it's important that we realize that this is not a right or wrong conversation, right? Because we don't like to be pushed around as strong-willed people. And again, a lot of people who are listening who have a strong-willed kid are going to realize that they have a strong desire to lead, all the things, right? And when someone tells you, you got to do it this way, it just creates stress in our bodies. We don't like it. But when we have a lot of options and we look at it from the perspective of what works well and what doesn't, it's just data. Right. So it's just like, does it work well or does it not? It's not right or wrong. It's not that if you've been relying on, and I'll speak to this in a minute, what I call external methods, which is the threats, bribery, rewards, yelling, intimidation, traditional punishment. And then you just want to look at your results, right? And the thing with strong-willed kids is you may finally be able to break them, so to speak, or get them to listen, but the chance of it is probably going to take a high level of those external things, which creates other problems in your own spirit and massive problems in the strong-willed kid when it comes to shame and who they identify as. So that's where a lot of the problems come in even more, that shows us in the data that this is not the way we want to. Even if we could, we get to do whatever we want. We're, you know, full-blown adults. And the reason why they don't respond well, Katie, is they just hate being externally controlled. It's like they come out of their skin when they feel like someone is trying to pressure them or control them. And I can really relate to this because when I'm driving, So my son and my husband are basically identical. And then Stella and I are basically identical. I've stopped saying that to her as a teenager because she hates it, right? Like, teenagers do not want to be identical to any parent. So I say it in quiet. But my little guy, Taryn, and his daddy, Terry, are similar, where they have strong will attributes and they have moments where they really stand up for the cause, right? And they're completely mellow people. Like, they are the rule followers. They enjoy being inside the box, right? Like, they have moments where they're like, heck no, right? So, anyways, when Terry is driving, which is my husband, I can feel my strong will come out a lot. Like, if there's two ways to go to the beach or park at the beach here in Southern California, parking can be a nightmare. I'm like, just give me those keys and get me behind that driver's wheel and I can settle my soul. But if I'm like sitting there trying to like just patiently watch him navigate and he gets all stressed out with parking anyways, it's like I come out of my skin. I like love to be in charge. And I'm just like, I just don't get stressed out navigating like a really busy parking lot, or Terry does. So it's the same with kids. It's like they have that aspect of their personality. There's a lot of like, when we have that personality, you just want to be mentored on what do you do in those situations when you have those flare up. But as parents, we just have to realize that they'll come out of their skins. So the more you bark commands, the more you give compliance statements, the more you basically try to like puppeteer them, which is what the external controls do, right? Like, it's like, I'm going to coerce you into doing what you're supposed to do, because you're going to either be scared of me or scared that I'm going to puppeteer some painful consequence. So it's all kind of leading and driving by fear. And again, that's like a justice button issue to them. Eventually, once they become teenagers, they revolt against it because they're like, heck no, that's not okay. That's not like a human thing. We're not cool with people leading by fear. So, but the biggest part of it is just their little souls can't settle when they're constantly having external controls. And what I mean by that is we are the one pushing the lever. We are the one with all, like, we're usually, you know, anywhere from three to five to seven times their size. We weigh more. We control all the money. Like, we have the ability to hurt and harm them if we choose. Like, it's an unequal power. And so once you start to like learn how to share the power and help empower them and make them feel like they have a voice and that their voice matters, they just start to thrive in life. And now, a decade later, I've seen the results of taking this very strong-willed child who was struggling to fit in and make friends and be in like a school environment. I really did think, like, is public school going to work for this kid? Is she going to get kicked out of kindergarten? And now, as almost 15-year-old, I've been particularly just like in awe of what the results are. Like, when it comes to friend groups, when it comes to avoiding peer pressure, when it comes to being different, when it comes to sports, music, all the things, I'm like, dang, Terry, this stuff works. Because it really does create a different dynamic with these kids. And then when they're empowered their whole life, it's just like, wow, the teenage thing feels different. So,
big thank you to today's podcast sponsor, Perfect Supplements. I start every day with a glass of warm lemon water. And when I'm being smart, I mix in a scoop of Perfect Supplements collagen to support my hair, skin, and strengthen my nails. This mixes in perfectly and is nearly tasteless. If you put it in a smoothie, the kids would never notice. And it's a great boost of protein to start the day. Perfect Supplements brand is very well sourced, grass-fed, and they take a lot of care with their products. Be sure to use the code KS10 for 10% off your order, and that is stackable with the bulk discounts when you order three or more Perfect Supplements products. Go to kidscookgrowthfood.com/perfect and use that code KS10.
When they're empowered their whole life, it's just like, wow, the teenage thing feels different. So,
that's so exciting to see the results. What's the secret sauce? Like, what are some of the very first practical steps that you took in those, you know, dastardly preschool years, and that you would recommend other parents begin to take to break the old molds?
Yeah. Well, I was recording a podcast for my show, the Fresh Start Family Show, which you're going to be on soon. I can't wait to interview Katie. It's going to be awesome. My community is going to love you. But I was building out an outline of just kind of the four things that, when I look back on the last decade, were really like crucial. And so I think in the beginning, it's definitely this empowerment is huge with these kids. Like, it is probably the number one thing. And then behind that, I had, I think, trust and safety for these children to be able to be messy human beings. Mm. And when they get, like, to be able to move from they're constantly getting in trouble to they're constantly learning from their mistakes.
Okay.
I think really helped shape Stella into who she is today. Because again, like they just have a tendency to like, I interviewed someone that said it so well, is a lot of times these kids are allergic to shame. So if there's shame used, which is like, what is wrong with you? Like, if you wouldn't have made that choice, then I wouldn't have had to hurt you. Or if you wouldn't have done that, then this wouldn't happen to you. Like these type of messages get subtly told to these kids 50,000 times a year as they're growing up when they keep messing up. So when you like creating the trust and the safety around like, hey, you're just a human that really loves to lead. And we have firm rules and boundaries in this home. And we're going to learn from every mistake that happens. And so building in that compassionate discipline piece, I think, is really important. So there's empowerment, there's trust and safety, and then there's connection, which kind of leads to belonging, Katie. And I know this is kind of high level stuff, so we can talk a little bit more about like what it would look like with like strategies. But the connection and relationship piece is just really feeding into the belonging. So it's this idea of like when you have this strong-willed kid that maybe is the one that gets the note sent home from school, is the one that you have to tell 6 times a week to not jump on the couch or put their shoes on when they leave the house or sit still at the dinner table. You know, often they can start to feel like the black sheep and identify as the black sheep of the family. And so there becomes this lack of belonging, which what I teach, like the psychology under what I teach, is that all human beings have basic needs, and the need to feel powerful and the need to belong are two of the biggest drivers of behavior. So like, it's easy to see how if you have a kid that has a strong, like even a stronger need to feel powerful than other kids, and then you're constantly pulling from that bucket and you're not really filling it up, you're not giving a ton of opportunities for them to make their own choices, for them to have a say, for them to have a voice, blah, blah, blah. Then that creates a problem. When their buckets are low, they misbehave more. But then when it comes to belonging, if that bucket is low and they're like, no one gets me, I'm always in trouble, my parents like are easier on this kid, so that means they don't like me as much. Like they just start to identify with that role, so they step into it, and they just have this lack of belonging, so they search for it in other ways. And so if they do become like a bully at school, then it's a way to belong at least. Like everybody knows not to mess with him. Or if they do get into like drugs and alcohol as a teen, like at least they're part of the crowd, right? Like they belong there. So unconditional love is a huge part of what we teach, really learning to see our kids and say to them through all the mistakes, nothing you can do will ever make us disappointed in you. You are perfectly designed and you are such an important part of this family. And you inspire us in A, B, C, D, and E ways. Thank you. Thank you for being who you are. And then also like having ways to really relate to that kid. So for us, like we're big into the ocean, we're big into our faith, we're big into rock and roll. And some of those, like those are ways that we connect and we belong as a family unit. So unconditional love, belonging, empowerment, trust and safety. And then the last thing I was going to mention is just the responsiveness, Katie. So when I started this work, I was super duper reactive, like a volcano, right? Like if Stella were to pinch her brother or pull the dog's tail, I thought that she really needed to know who's boss. And it often like came out just like I witnessed in my home, right? Like strong reaction. It took me 8 years to stop yelling. So learning and developing new habits around like how to step to the side, how to actually incorporate taking a deep breath, how to find a healthy intention and like call on that when she spilled the milk for the 50th time after I asked her to put the lid on, right? Like just learning how to slow down and like really implement a lot of natural consequences, which is like they clean up their own mess, so to speak. Which is something I teach on the compassionate discipline front. And then like logical consequences really had to become, you know, like it has to be related, it has to teach responsibility, like that replaced punishment. So it just was like, that's basically 98% of my students' journey is to move from reactive parenting when you have this triggering thing all the time, right? No one really teaches you until you're in it, and then moving into like, okay, how do I consistently respond with detachment, with firm kindness, with connection and grace? So that's kind of the overarching things. And I can get more tactical too, if you want like specific, not strategy theory based stuff.
Well, I'm curious, you said it took 8 years to stop yelling. Yelling's probably, you know, the most obvious example of reacting. We react with our voice and our tone and our anger. Can you compress those 8 years for us by telling us how you did it? And maybe we can only take 4 years to stop yelling.
I know, right? Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. I had a lot of support. I mean, I was in so many life coaching weekend courses where I learned, like, really, I think underneath the yelling thing is just, I think yelling is a facade. It makes us feel powerful in the exact moment that we're claiming to be powerless. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at your kids and you're like, you know, I think there's a lot of fear underneath of it. Like, we're scared that we don't have control. We're scared somebody's going to get hurt. We're scared that no one respects us. Like, there's a lot to look at underneath from like a life coaching perspective. And then learning how to feel like not ignore the feeling of scared. So I always teach that on the other side of scared is bravery and courage. And so in order to be a painful generational cycle breaker, someone who is like, oh, the three generations ahead, like before me, like, God bless them. They did what they could with the tools that they had, but everybody yelled. There was a lot of fear in force. There was disconnection, right? There was fighting in the home, and then no one would really make amends, or everyone would just move on and act like it didn't happen. There was broken relationships with aunts and uncles, or, you know, whatever it may be. To be someone who really breaks that and says, like, you know what? That's not the way we're going to do it in this home. And it takes a lot of looking at, like, what is the trigger for me? Like, why do I think? And so a lot of it comes with becoming more comfortable with actually being out of control, realizing that, like, control is actually not the goal. So I always ask my students, do you want to control your kids, or do you want to teach them to control themselves? And of course, everyone says the second. So it's like, but slowing it down, and a lot of it comes from like afterwards. So, when we're in that habit, you just do it a lot. You yell, you scream. I mean, I have upteen stories. But afterwards, being able to look at it after you've learned some tools on like emotion processing and things like that, to be like, oh, this was the thoughts in my head. This is the feeling that I was like, no way, skipped right over it. And when we skip feelings, the results are usually not great. Mm-hmm. So instead, like, slowing down and being like, okay, next time when this happens, when the stimulus comes my way and I want to create the space between stimulus and response, I'm going to maybe have some physical things that I do. Like, for me, I'm super physical. Exercise, like, and movement has always been like, I have to have it, right? Like, in order to, like, if I'm super angry, I'll clean. And it's a great way for me to process like anger if I'm really mad at the kids or something. But like having a physical, like, I'm going to actually step to the side or step outside while I think for just a moment, and celebrating anytime you even create an ounce of space between the stimulus and response, like, that starts to break the shame cycle. Because a lot of times what happens, I mean, obviously this is thick, Katie, sorry. But what happens is people think that by beating themselves up, then that's going to stop the habit, and it actually prolongs it. So we always teach that oftentimes you'll, air quotes, beat up your kids, whether it's like being really hard on them or coming down on them or telling them they need to be better. It mimics the way you talk to yourself. So I say, like, that's a great place to start, is just, even if you create 1 ounce of pause, celebrate yourself and also start talking to yourself differently. Like, it's no wonder you yell. You were, you know, that was modeled to you maybe in your house for 18 years until you left for college or whatever. Like, it makes sense why you yell. It's just a habit. It's just a habit. Like, what would happen if I slowed down a little, or I'm capable, I can do this, or I did the best that I can today, and that's enough. Like, we're starting to replace and But first, you got to catch those thoughts. But I think most people, if they analyze themselves tomorrow after they yell, and especially when you lay your head on your pillow at night, they'll find that they'll often are like, man, I really blew it today. Or what's, you know, maybe a blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot underneath of it. But the overarching, the number one thing is just learning to be more comfortable with the messiness and being out of control. And similar to your cooking thing, Katie, is learn to have your kids help more. Like, it's not all on you. Like, we're not octopi. We don't have eight arms. We cannot solve all the issues. Like, we need our kids to step up. And in order to have them step up, whether it's with peaceful conflict resolution or actually cooperating more, whatever it may be, we need to ask them. We need to learn to ask for their support. We need to learn how to influence them with true dignity because they'll respond better, all that kind of stuff. And then once you start operating as a team, you realize that you don't need as much control to feel like you're thriving as a parent.
Yeah, what I like in what you just did is, you know, you're looking at the problem of yelling as a parent and digging to that root cause. Why is the yelling happening? And then trying to find the inverse of that. And I know you do the same with the strong-willed child's misbehavior. If we look at their misbehavior, you know, what is the root? And I think you often kind of see that as the power seeking. So you use the word empowerment as one of the strategies to use. So how do you give a child power appropriately without letting them run the family? Because that's giving them, I think, too much, right? So how do you find that right balance of empowering to, you know, fix the root of their misbehavior, but not letting them run amok?
Yes, great. So great question, because a lot of people think that positive parenting is permissive parenting.
Yeah, right.
Right. So like, it's really not. It's a lot of times, I'd say the majority of my students in our Fresh Start programs, they often are coming from that like reactive into the responsive, but a lot of times they pendulum swing, like they'll start going into the permissive because they just feel so guilty for the way they've done it for so long. Mm-hmm. So, but a lot of times we're spending a lot of time as coaches helping people say no more, not less.
Okay.
So let me give you, so yes, there's a lot of no's, there's a lot of firm boundaries in the home, right? Like, we're not letting the kids rule the roost, but I'm going to give you an example that's perfect for Miss Katie because it's cooking related. Okay. So Stella, when she was little, would have these grand ideas. I mean, it was hilarious. Like, the things she would come up with, and there was no stopping her, right? Like, it was just like, you'd try to coerce her to do something different, and it was like, no. And it was just, you learned over time that it was just easier to support her, and it like, her little spirit just thrived. So I remember she used to have these grand ideas to have these sales. She was always an entrepreneur, and I loved it because I'm like, the little entrepreneur. She's just like her mama. And so there was a day where she wanted to sell rocks out front at like 6
o'clock. I sold rocks as a kid.
Yeah, it was like 8 a.m. And she did, they were like cool. They had like gems and stuff. I mean, it was like, but in my head, I had all these reasons why. Like, grandma had bought her the rocks. Like, it's not okay that you're selling these rocks. Like, grandma bought you those rocks, right? And then I'm like, it's Monday morning. You're not going to make money on Monday morning. I never forget being like, okay, you know what? Cool. We got you. Sure. Like, again, learning to walk myself off the ledge and stop, like, there was these elements of like control and thinking that I knew better, blah, blah, blah. And so that was one of the first times that I was like, okay, cool, we can go sit out front. And she made like $7 that morning. On a Monday morning, it was more money than I made, right? And a grandma walking by with her kids, and the kid was like so happy. Another time, Stella wanted to, she loved making little businesses out front with food. So she would create these restaurants. So whether it was a car wash, lemonade stand, whatever it may be. But one day, she wanted to have a drive-through. And she wanted, it was hilarious. She would get her brother and she'd be like, he was a little minion. And she'd be like, okay, you're going to do this, that, that. And he loved it. Like, he loved it. If Stella would play with him and include him, which my kids are just like polar opposites. They have a tendency to bicker a little bit. They're just not the family where they're like super duper close playing all together. The 3 years apart, but he would just love it. Like, she would include him. So this one day she named it, Hot Grills. Because they were grilling hot dogs and hamburgers out front, and she really wanted to make it a rule that you couldn't walk up, you had to drive up. And I remember thinking like, oh my gosh, the neighbors are gonna think we're crazy. And the whole neighborhood had so much fun that day. And we just let her go with it. Like, tell us, like, what do you want us to do? What is the poster going to say? Okay, what do you want me to text? What do you want me to text the neighbors?
Aww.
Like, just little things like that over and over again. Drums became a huge empowerment piece for her. She was always the kinesthetic kid that, again, had trouble keeping her hands to herself. Or okay. I should say it was a journey for her to learn that. So getting her into drums from kindergarten, now she's like an amazing drummer, She was allowed to hit those drums as hard as she could. She was allowed to move emotions or energy through that in a very kinesthetic way. Volleyball was another way that we allowed her to be in a situation where she could feel on top of the world when she either won or hit that ball and made a point. So it's not all just with, like, do you allow them to stay up late or not? There's a lot in there. We teach a lot when it comes to power struggle dissolving, as far as like choices and putting kids in charge and how do you like step to the side of a power struggle instead. Most of us, just if we're being honest, we're moving to the threats pretty fast. Like, how do you get away from that in the day-to-day limit setting? But then there's those bigger things that I just gave an example of that we tried to find as much as we could.
Yeah, it sounds like if it's not a moral issue, it's not a safety issue, you look for ways to say yes. You look for places where you can say yes. So, and you reserve your no's for those ethical issues, for the safety issues, for the, you know, things where the stakes actually are high. What about, let's just talk about eating really quickly, because we know we have a lot of people in our community who have picky eaters. And sometimes the picky eating is physiological. It's, you know, it's really in the child's body, but sometimes it's a power struggle, or it could be the combo of both. You know, the child has some physiological issue that causes a picky eating, and then the power struggles ensue and sort of inflame everything. So what do you recommend to parents at the table when, I mean, the child has to eat something? That becomes a health and safety issue if they starve themselves, but yet we can't make them eat. How do we sidestep a power struggle at the table?
Man, it is an intense, I just want to give everyone who's dealing with that a big virtual hug, because it's a lot. It's a lot, you know, like these little humans, they come out of our bodies or we adopt them and we just love them so much. And you just want them to be nourished. You want them to be nurtured. You want them to grow, right? Like, it makes so much sense to me why there's such like a control element that comes in. Mm-hmm. That is really, it just is a journey to learn. Like, if that is your assignment, right? Like, my assignment was a strong-willed kid. And I'm like, thank you, God. That was intense, but it's been beautiful. If your assignment is the picky eating kid, just know that, like, every day, what you're learning and what you're trying with them, it matters. Like, you're making a difference by opening your heart to do things a little bit differently, right? Because, again, like, the traditional approach is to, like, bribe, threaten, reward, right? And then to especially be really like, yeah, and to be really engaged as far as like attached to the energy of the resistance, right? So what I recommend is just, you know, just to take a deep breath. And again, the compassionate self-talk is important. And whatever happens today, you did what you the best that you could with the information that you had. It's so important to have strong mentors if you have a picky eating kid. We've had a few people on our podcast that we love, and I know you do so much support and guidance with helping people with actual, like, really data-driven stuff, right? But when it comes to the power struggles, just know that, again, if you have a kiddo that is sensitive and has a strong will, then using the external controls is just usually going to flare up the problem even more. So really, like, first, we always say, like, find the healthy intention. So when you step to the side, so if you put the food down and they're like, and I can kind of relate to this right now, because Stella at 15 is starting to become, she's become like a little, you know, not anything compared to what I would define as picky eaters, but she's definitely started to exhibit some stuff where you're like, oh, I just made that meal for you and you're not going to even touch it. Like, typical teenager stuff, like, I would eat that, but it was just, you know, kind of gross. And you're like, ah! So number one is don't take it personal. Don't take it personal. And when you step to the side for just a minute, whether you need to get yourself a drink of water or, you know, just turn to the side so you can do a deep breath exhale, right? It's like a version of the exasperated sigh, but I want you to turn to the side when you do it. Like, you know, like you just want to get oxygen in yourself and ask yourself, like, what is my intention here? And really, it's a good idea to get in touch with what is the yes behind your no. So if they're like, no, I'm not hungry, I'm going to get up, or no, I'm not eating this, like your yes is like, well, we need to eat something so we can create nourishment in your body. Like we just need to, like, the point is there's like, the point is not to make them behave. The point is not to, the intention, I should say, is not to make sure they know who's boss, not let them get away with things or whatever. The yes and the intention is to teach them how to take care of themselves, how to nourish their own body, how to be able to join in on family situations and at least be present for meals, right? But the goal is self-sustainment. And so I think that will encourage you a ton to get to just have the courage to maybe take a break from the bribery or the rewards or the threats for just one night and move more into the empowerment side of things, which is like, you know, I love the idea of like allowing kids to serve themselves. And I always believe that we're in charge of what goes on the table and they're in charge of serving themselves. And like, or I don't always let my kids serve themselves, but I'm saying they're in charge of what they consume. Right. And we're constantly with the mentorship. Like we're constantly with like, hey, empathy, it makes sense. Like you have preferences, like you and your preferences are sometimes unique to the family. And what are you going to choose? What are you going to decide to use today to get your body the nourishment that it needs so you can still grow your muscles and climb high on the monkey bars like you want to, or run right. fast on your soccer team like you want to? Like we're a team. Like here's right. the options.
Yes, and you and always saying, of the options on the table, not the whole pantry yeah. or the whole refrigerator. We're not giving them carte blanche, yeah. which is important.
Yeah. Like here's the options, always making sure that there's something there that feels good, right? Sure. Like the fruit, the orange slices, or even like a little bit of goldfish, whatever it may be, but like making sure there's something that they, and then really building them up and making sure you're celebrating any type of wins or successes. I think those are all type of things that can start to help you back away a little bit from the power struggles. Why are you so difficult? Why can't you just be easier? Like just take two bites and you can have the gummies afterwards. Yeah. If you don't sit and eat your meal, then you're not getting TV tonight. Like that's, in my experience, only going to add drama and pour fuel to the fire. And if it got results, honestly, Katie, I'd be like, you know, I don't know, maybe we should just be more, yeah, but it doesn't get results, right? Like it doesn't right. cause the children. It usually just causes anxiety and shame to be baked in a little deep. And yeah. then that creates even more problems down the road. So I don't know if that helps at all. I'm definitely not an expert.
Yeah. And parents don't end up feeling good when we play the blame and shame game. And then we take on the guilt. So Wendy, you have empowered us as parents. You've given so many good mindset shift and philosophical ideas and just really sort of painted a picture. It's lovely to have, you know, a 15-year-old who is thriving as a strong-willed adolescent, right? She's not even a strong-willed child anymore. And so thank you so much for painting that picture for our Healthy Parenting Connector community. And we just want to send everyone over to you. Instagram's a great place to start at Fresh Start Wendy. And then do you have anything else that you want to share with our audience today?
Yes. Thank you, Katie, again, for having me. It's been so much fun to connect. Come over to the website. We actually offer a few different starter packs and free classes, depending on where a parent is. So if you're like, oh my gosh, I am the yeller, the door slammer, the wrist grabber, I need to move from reactive to responsive parenting, we have a free starter pack and just a learning guide and a free class. If you're like knee deep in power struggles and your strong-willed kid is killing you, we have a starter pack and a free class that we want to gift to you. And then if you're on the discipline front and you're like, I am so sick of threatening spankings and putting my kid in timeout that I really want to learn what compassionate discipline looks like, then we have a starter pack for that. So just head on over to the website, freshstartfamilyonline.com, listen to the podcast, Fresh Start Family Show, and Katie will be on there soon. I can't wait for that. And then, yeah, come find me at Instagram because I do a lot of free educational teaching over there.
Okay, awesome. Perfect. And I've got all those links to share wherever we post this video or this interview. Once again, thank you so much, Wendy from Fresh Start Family. We talked about raising cactus kids, how to shift your parenting style to better fit your strong-willed child, to raise them to be leaders, right? The leaders of tomorrow, and friends, the leaders of today, because our kids need people to follow and they will follow their peers. So why not raise them right? Thank you again, Wendy. I'm Katie Kimball, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Healthy Parenting Handbook podcast. I hope your brain feels fed and your heart feels full and that you feel connected, knowing that there are other parents on this journey with you. We're just trying to raise healthy, independent adults. And you know, the next time you think, man, there is no handbook for this job, now there is the Healthy Parenting Handbook. Look up the podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please leave a review, my friends, as that helps other parents who need this information to find us. And of course, subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. That's a huge help. You can also look for our shorts as a reel on Instagram at Katie Kimball Kids Cook, or subscribe to the Healthy Parenting Handbook Shorts channel on YouTube. You'll get those bite-sized portions of healthy parenting advice.